Thanks for tuning in to the Thirst for More podcast. I'm your host, Brandon Smitley. Thirst for More podcast was created to help strength and conditioning coaches, personal trainers, fitness enthusiasts, and anyone that loves lifting heavy shit all be connected under one roof. We take deep dives into coaching, programming and training, running gyms, nutrition, and overall improving your knowledge in the field of strength and conditioning. If you're new here, I'm glad you're able to tune in and hope you can just take away one awesome piece of information today to help you along with your journey. If you're a returning supporter, I appreciate you being along for the ride. Now let's dive into today's episode. Welcome back to the Thirst for More podcast. I'm your host, Brandon Smitley, and where we always dive into some strength performance and helping improve your lifestyle. If you're happy to watch over on YouTube, do me a favor, hit that like button, hit that subscribe button if you've not done so already. It's completely free and it really helps the channel out. If you happen to be listening over on Spotify, Apple, iTunes, anywhere you enjoy your podcast, also appreciate if you leave us a 5-star review if you like the content that I happen to make, and leave a positive review if you can do so as well. Now, let's dive into today's episode. Really, I'm really going to talk about dopamine. Now, what really got me kind of into this was a couple of previous episodes, I talked about 75 hard. And so I kind of wanted to do some more research on the dopamine side and be able to provide you some more information there. And so today I'm going to talk about dopamine because I do believe that from a strength, conditioning, performance, fitness, lifestyle based approach, that it does affect your workout sessions, your nutrition mindset, and growth mindset of both of those aspects of in terms of improving your health and your performance, and just even getting up with that early alarm. Now, before you think this is just another get motivated episode, I'm going to stop you right there. And I really want you to kind of help you understand the actual neurochemistry that's what drives us to go into the gym, continue to train hard, continue to come back, continue to make gains, and or even maybe what makes you stop going after a certain amount of time and, you know, you lose that positive momentum, why that might even happen. And more importantly, we're going to talk about why so many people that are unknowingly destroying their motivation by the things that they're doing that they actually think are helping them. And so I'm going to kind of talk to you here a little bit about some stuff with cold exposure. And while I'm not a huge cold exposure person in terms of how I use it, I don't have like a cold tub or anything like that. But I'm not going to basically go on here and say, quote unquote, it's great for recovery. I'm going to look at something from a different side here on the dopamine side. And so to really kick this off, we're going to kind of talk about this cold water study. And it's a study that was published in the European Journal of Physiology, where the researchers had people get into water of different temperatures, warm, moderately cold, and very cold water. And they stayed there for up to an hour and they measured their cortisol, their adrenaline, and their dopamine through blood draws. And what they found was that cold water exposure led to massive increases in adrenaline. And that's the, you know, kind of the oh shit moment that you get when you go to lift a heavy weight or you get put underneath a lot of pressure. You're going to feel that obviously as soon as you get in the cold water. But here's the kicker. Dopamine actually started rising around the 10 to 15 minutes after getting into the cold water and kept rising and rising until it hit 250% above the baseline. So that's 2.5 times your normal dopamine levels that you get after being in that cold water exposure for 10 to 15 minutes. Now, get this, after people got out of the cold water, that dopamine increase was sustained. So it wasn't just like an acute thing. It happened even after the cold water exposure. And so we're talking about hours of elevated dopamine. And compare that to, let's talk about a drug that's not great for you, which would be cocaine, which spikes dopamine 2.5 times, but then crashes incredibly hard. So you can look at how this is similar to cocaine. I'm not going to tell you to do cocaine. I'm not saying this is cocaine, but from a dopamine side, we're getting, at least the researchers are seeing, very similar results. Or you can pair it even to sexual activity, which also doubles your dopamine drive as well. And so cold water exposure created a massive sustained increase in the molecule that drives your motivation, your focus, and your desire to pursue your goals. So going into today's episode, what I'm going to try to help you understand from the research that I have done trying to compile this is what dopamine actually is and what it's not, why your baseline dopamine matters more than any dopamine hit that you're going to get, how pre-workout supplements and music might be killing your long-term motivation, the dark side of progress photos and social media on your training drive, why intermittent fasting works from a neurochemical perspective, and practical protocols to maintain high motivation for training year after year, so long-term training perspective, and then also supplements that work, and maybe even some that are believed to work that may not do what you think they're doing. All right, so it's going to be dense, but I promise you, you're going to walk away with a great understanding of how to better your performance from a mental side. Again, like not just that, you know, go drift hard, lift heavy kind of stuff. I'm not going to push that motivation stuff, but it's going to let your brain operate better than 99% of people in the gym fitness performance, and maybe what even makes those 1% people that 1% from a dopamine side. Now, let's kind of talk about the dopamine myths. And you've probably heard that dopamine hits, and I'll say that in quotations here, like every time you hit a PR or you're going to get a dopamine hit, right? You get that really good feel good. Or maybe every time that you post something online that you're really happy about and you get a lot of likes and interaction, you're probably going to get a dopamine hit. Or even when you drink like a pre-workout with a hell of a lot of caffeine and different supplementation ingredients that are going to help with your mental acuity and whatever, you're probably also getting a dopamine hit from that. And so this language is completely wrong in terms of causing people to misunderstand how to stay actually motivated. So what I want you to understand is you have a baseline level of dopamine that's circulating all the time. There's always this baseline, and this baseline determines how you feel generally. You know, are you motivated? Are you dragging? Do you want to train or do you want to stay in bed? That's kind of like your baseline. And then you have your peaks in your dopamine that are above your baseline. And these peaks happen when you experience something exciting or pleasurable, hitting a PR, having that really good feel guilty pleasure food that you like. For me, I love some mac and cheese. I just had some homemade smoked mac and cheese with bacon in it that I made for a Friendsgiving. It was fantastic. I can definitely tell you I got a dopamine hit off that. And even getting compliments from other people, whether that be gym-related or just in everyday life, getting positive compliments, that also raises your dopamine. But here's what nobody seems to tell you is that when you experience a peak in dopamine, your baseline level afterward actually drops. So let me say that again. The higher the peak that you get in dopamine, the lower your baseline goes afterwards. So there's kind of almost like this average that your body's always trying to sustain, right? We know that a lot in terms of physiology, that there's a baseline for almost everything that our body has, and our body always wants to try to stay at baseline. So in this case, when you hit a major peak, your body's also going to have a major dump as well to be able to try to find that homeostasis or baseline. And so why this might matter for people in the strength, conditioning, fitness, performance realm is that one, drinks like a high-stim pre-workout before every single session, if that's you, this definitely applies. If you blast your favorite hype music during every single set that you train with, or you've got that go-to playlist, maybe you're addicted to the aspect of posting online on social media and getting that interaction. We know that's a lot more common nowadays here in 2025 and beyond. You know, not only getting the likes and the interaction, but maybe even just posting things of yourself. We see this a lot with the influencers over on Instagram and TikTok. They definitely put a lot of value into their social media and how they feel they appear, they look on social media. That's definitely going to be some dopamine-based responses. And then reward yourself with a cheat meal after training, that's also going to give you those. So you're stacking these dopamine-releasing activities on top of each other. And in the moment, you actually feel really good, and you should feel really good. In more cases than not, if you're doing something that you're actually proud of, you should feel good. However, you know, you're also can be fired up. You know, the training session was awesome. Maybe you hit a PR. Life's good. These are all great things. There's nothing wrong with that. I'm not going to talk about your conquering life and enjoying everything that you're doing in the world. I really put my hats off and appreciate that to you. But the really big thing here I want you to kind of take away is what happens the next day or the next week. You know, you probably need more. You need more pre-workout. You need a different music or a different hype song. You might need external validation. Maybe that's from friends, family, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, whatever. And the training itself feels less rewarding. And so you're wondering why you've lost motivation. And it's not that necessarily you have lost the motivation. You've just depleted your dopamine baseline by constantly spiking it through all these external things. And so you're basically just getting this dump of positive feel-good things, and you're not as receptive to them. And so there's two primary dopamine pathways that we're going to talk about here. So those of you that are science-based nerds, this is probably going to be what's a little bit more interesting for you. And this first one is the nigrostriatal pathway. I hope I said that correctly. This runs from an area called the substantia nigra to the dorsal striatum. And this pathway is primarily involved in movement. When this pathway is damaged, you get Parkinson's disease. People can't initiate movement patterns smoothly. They shake. They have trouble with motor control. The mesolimbic pathway, on the other hand, this is the one we really care about in terms of motivation. And this runs from the ventral tegmentum. I think tegmentum is what I'm looking for here. I apologize. Some of these words are newer to me. I'm not a brain neurosurgeon or anything like that. To the nucleus accumbens and the prefrontal cortex. And this is your motivation and reward pathway. And this is what gets you off the couch and into the gym to continue to train hard, do the things that you like to do. And this is what makes you crave training or crave, say, on your couch. We all have our ebbs and flows. We have days where we want to be vegetables and days we want to train. But more than likely, if you're listening to this podcast, you're more than likely more driven to go and train and do things that not only feel good to you personally, but you know are good for your body, and they're going to have better long-term benefits for your health, fitness, and performance. Both pathways do matter for athletic performance. You need the movement pathway to execute your lifts properly and build that good quality neurological-based output from a lifting and training perspective, but you also need the motivation pathway to actually get to the gym and be there and actually enjoy the things that you're doing in the gym, no matter what your training goals are. Now, how dopamine actually works, it can be released in two ways. One is locally, and that's at specific synapses between the neurons. And number two is going to be volumetrically, which is dumped out broadly across many neurons. So when you take something that massively increases dopamine, like amphetamines, cocaine, or even high doses of caffeine combined with other stimulants, you're getting both types of release. You're flooding your system with dopamine. This feels great in the moment. Anybody's had a lot of caffeine or any kind of like upper-based drug or chemical, you're going to know that you're going to feel really good in the moment. But it also means that you're creating a bigger gap between your peak and your baseline. And so remember that how good something feels isn't just about the absolute level of the dopamine. It's about the level relative to your baseline. And this is why the massive spikes of caffeine and different stimulants, we say to avoid those, because usually, as we talk about, the bigger the peak, the bigger the crash. This is why your first ever training session usually feels good. Or if you have a training session after coming back from extended period of layoff, or you're taking some downtime of some very easy training, you get back into a hard training, it's why it might feel really good. And so now, once you actually get into exercising and getting more consistent, now you feel like you need a better quality gym, better quality atmosphere. You need these other things to continue to get that feel good that you were getting. Maybe that's the music, the pre-workout, maybe even a training partner, right? So we know that there was a spot where we all got bit by this kind of bug and we love to do it. And as we've done this longer and longer, and if you're listening, you've trained for any good length amount of time, anything over 5-10 years, you know that showing up is almost a routine habit at this point, but we don't get the dopamine hit that we did when we were much younger and we were constantly getting those crazy gains. And so that's something that you need to keep in mind about how the dopamine aspect of this actually works. Now, we're going to kind of talk about the pleasure and the pain balance. So Dr. Anna Lembick from Stanford has this concept called the pleasure-pain balance. When you engage in something pleasurable, there's pleasure in the moment, but there's a pain that follows. And that pain is actually just the wanting of more of that thing. So in the gym contest, this actually explains quite a lot if you really think about it. It's why you can't just have one rest day. Suddenly you're taking off maybe a week. It's why just one cookie turns into eating the whole sleeve of Oreos. Been there, done that many, many times. I say, I'm only going to have 2 or 3 Oreos, and next thing I know, the entire sleeve is gone. It's why checking your Instagram, your TikTok really quick actually turns out to being 15 or 20 minutes of scrolling. Again, we've all been there on social media. And then why skipping the gym once makes it easier to skip again and again. And for beginners, this is definitely a big one. As we try to build these habits, we want to try to not only reward consistency, but the dopamine hits of the negative things of just chilling out or just having those feel-good, pleasurable foods actually deters us away from doing those things. And so from a dopamine perspective, here's what's actually happening. When you engage in a highly dopamine-based activity, eating hyper-palatable food, you're scrolling your social media, you're playing video games, you get a spike. But afterwards, your baseline drops below where it was. You feel slightly worse than you did before, The only thing that makes you feel better in that moment is doing the thing again. And so this is the addiction cycle. This is kind of why I really wanted to get into this dopamine episode and do more research on this, was because this addiction cycle is something that I think many of us have and we don't realize. And I think the more that we understand it and how it works, the better we can use this, not only from a going to the gym perspective, but our health, fitness, performance, and overall just making better quality decisions in our life. And we can understand the actual psychology and the science of the dopamine and what's going on. It makes you a little more educated in figuring out what your next step should be. And so, yes, you can absolutely become addicted to pre-workout, caffeine, going to the gym itself, taking progress photos, looking for validation online through social media. Those are all very addicting things. And I even made a post over on Instagram about how I got rid of Instagram for, I think it was 30 days I did. And it was one of those things where, you know, it was actually kind of hard. You know, I still had the app, but, you know, the temptation to click on it, you don't really realize how much time you waste on there until you don't use it anymore. And so I'm not going to tell you have to go to that extreme, but it was almost like an experiment that I did. But I also just felt so overly bombarded and overwhelmed by doing that. And so I kind of wanted to get it out of my life for a little bit because I felt like it was becoming a job. I got the whole post on there. I'll try to remember to link that in the show notes for you about that exact little quote-unquote quasi-experiment that I did. But I think a lot of us have a lot more issues with this than we're willing to admit. And I challenge you, if you wonder if you are this person, it's either uninstall the app or just make a good little contract with yourself. Hey, I'm not going to use this for 2 weeks. And that's what I started out was 2 weeks. And it ended up being, I ended up going 4 weeks. I really wanted to see what would happen. And I actually felt a lot better when I got back on the platform. I didn't feel like I was forced to do stuff. And as somebody that uses social media to kind of like, I don't want to say promote my brand. I don't feel like I am a brand by any means, not even close. I do not have a massive following, but I do like to educate people. And so not being able to do that kind of like ate at me. I'm kind of wondering like, how am I going to get more online clients? If I, you know, I don't want to say I'm always looking for more online clients, but I'm almost ever not at a point where I'm not willing to take someone on if they're willing to do the things they need to do. So you know, just as somebody that makes part of his living doing stuff online as I make this podcast, you know, it's something that could actually be a negative. But I really think deep down, there's more of us that are kind of addicted to these social media apps, and they're designed to keep you addicted to them. And so I think this ties into that whole dopamine receptors aspect of it, but especially the motivation side when we're looking at training and performance and how just a simple example of using like Instagram and TikTok or whatever your social media of choice is and how that can actually negatively affect us and how much it's actually ruining our lives and how we can actually apply that effort elsewhere and probably see a much better return on investment in our lives. And this Instagram, TikTok just seems to be like something that most of us can understand more than likely if you're listening to this episode. And so here's something that I want you to try to understand is that dopamine is a universal currency. And so your brain doesn't have separate dopamine systems for food, for sex, for training, for video games, social media. It's all the same system. A dopamine hit is a dopamine hit. Now, your body might like a certain dopamine hit more than mine does. Like, for example, you might really like TikTok. And so you spend a lot of time on TikTok, where I might get my dopamine hits, say, for playing video games. It's not, but just using an example that we're still getting the same dopamine hits, but we have our own little niche of a thing that really kind of does it for us. And this is really what drives people to have addictions. And so this means that if you're like binge watching Netflix at night or YouTube, you're scrolling TikTok for hours, you're playing video games and all your free time, you're always eating those hyper palatable foods, you're constantly checking your phone for notifications, you're depleting the same dopamine system that you need to feel motivated to train. And so your body does not distinguish the difference. So if you're constantly dumping dopamine into these other things, like as I mentioned, that are quite frankly just not that important, they can come back to harm your training, your health, fitness, and your performance. And being that what this podcast is about, this is kind of why I wanted to touch base on this and do some further research on my end to be able to help you out here. And so let me give you like a practical example, I guess. So let's just say it's Sunday night. You spent your whole weekend kind of relaxing, vegging out. Which really means you watch Netflix, maybe you watched a movie with your spouse, you scrolled Instagram for a little bit, you know, maybe you went out to eat with a friend, family member, you did something, you know, out on the town, had some really good food, maybe even had a drink, drink or two. You end up staying later, up much later than you normally do. Those are all very high dopamine response based activities. And so Monday morning, your alarm goes off 5, 6 a.m. to either go to that training session or go to work, and you feel like absolute shit. You got no motivation and you're thinking, I'm just tired. I just need more rest. But really what's happening is your dopamine baseline is in the gutter from all the high dopamine based activities that you engaged in over the weekend. And so now the gym and slash work, you know, if you train on Monday evening or even go to work in the morning or, you know, however your schedule is lined up, which requires that effort and that discomfort, seems completely unappealing because your brain is seeking the next easy dopamine hit, not necessarily your training sessions or feeling rewarded from going to work or going to do the high effort things that you got to do on a Monday morning. And so there's a concept in addiction that's called a progressive narrowing of the things that bring you pleasure. And at first, the addict enjoys a lot of things. And I can really speak to this. I feel that I do have a very addictive based driven personality. That's just the way that I am. And so they enjoy their family, their hobbies, their work, and their maybe drug of choice. Maybe that's caffeine, maybe that's nicotine, maybe that's alcohol, maybe that's an illegal drug. For many people, that can be a very big issue, just some kind of substance that they're actually addicted to. But over time, the only thing that brings pleasure is the substance or the drug, and everything else becomes gray and meaningless. And this happens in the fitness world as well. So think about the person who can only train if they have their pre-workout, or maybe they can only train if they've got their headphones on, their music, they forget their headphones at home, they got to go back home and get them. They can only train at their specific gym or their specific piece of equipment, or maybe they can only train if they're quote unquote feeling motivated. They're not feeling motivated that day, so they don't choose to go. Or maybe they can only train if they've gotten enough likes on their recent posts and they're starting to feel like, man, nobody's liking my stuff. Like, why am I even training anymore? They've made motivation contingent on all these external factors. They've narrowed their ability to experience pleasure from training itself. The training is no longer what's actually rewarding, only the context around the training. And this is a very dangerous trap when it comes to training in the health, fitness, and performance room. If you go look on social media right now, how many people are actually posting their training because they do enjoy the training? I hate to sound this way, but you can go on social media and just scroll if you happen to have more of a fitness-based feed anyways. If you happen to just scroll for, say, 3 to 5 minutes, you can tell how many people are posting on social media because they're either trying to provide valid education or they're proud of what they actually did and they're not there to get the likes or whatever. However, you can also tell the ones that are posting merely for the engagement, right? They are just craving the engagement. And when they don't get it, they don't feel good about themselves. There's way more people out there that are not willing to admit that, especially now when we start talking about the OnlyFans and the sex work that's done online. Many of these platforms are used to promote that. And they're doing that to give them that feel-good sense about something that they're doing. Now, they might be making money off those activities, which I don't agree with, but they can do whatever they want at the end of the day. But they're chasing something else, right? That's what I really want you to try to understand here. So you compare this to the person who loves training in different places. They can train anytime. They make it flexible with their schedule. They aren't too worried about the music. Maybe they would prefer their own music, but hey, if they don't have to have it, they don't have it. Or maybe they forgot their pre-workout, whatever, they're going to go do it anyways. Maybe they're in a good mood or mad mood. They still show up anyways, do the work, and they still, at the end of the day, find the satisfaction in the progress. They say, hey, I enjoyed the process of getting here to the gym today. Well, it's not what I wanted. I'm doing everything I can to make it the best that I possibly can. And that's someone who's truly in love with the process of what they're doing and not actually chasing all the external validation that they're getting from it, especially when we talk about the fitness field. And so that person actually has what I would consider a healthy dopamine system. They're not reliant on the constant external stimulation, where those that need that constant external validation are just in the dumps with their dopamine. And so you have to decide what kind of person you want to be. Hopefully, if you're listening to this, I'm educating on some stuff and you can figure out how to make some modifications, adjustments. And then you also have to think about which of these people will still be around until 10 years, especially when we talk about the fitness industry and those that train people and work with others. If you're looking for that immediate external validation, you will not last long. You will burn really bright and then you will burn out. Those of us that have been in the field for 10, 15, 20 years, I think you can figure out what drives us to continue to do what we do. And that's the process, enjoying the process, doing it for other people and serving for other people. And our dopamine hit that we get from the reward side is seeing other people do great things. And that gives us our dopamine hit. But that's much more sustainable because we're giving that to other people. We're not trying to get that external validation for ourselves. Okay, so I kind of want to talk about some of the dark side of the motivation hacks. I'll say that in quotes here. But the first one I want to talk about here is pre-workout. And so I'm not anti-pre-workout. I use caffeine before training, you know, I don't say all the time, but pretty consistently, especially when training in the morning to the afternoon aspect. In the evenings, I do not. But I want you to understand what's happening neurochemically so that you can make informed decisions. And I've got an episode on caffeine as well. You can check that back in some previous episodes also. But most pre-workout contains caffeine, so 150 to 400 milligrams. So that's going to increase your dopamine receptor density, which is actually a good thing from a performance perspective and training. We want that. L-tyrosine or L-DOPA precursors, so directly increase the dopamine production just from ingesting those ingredients. You've got beta-alanine, which actually creates that tingling sensation. Some people know what that is. They like that. They associate that with a quality training session. And there's other synonyms too. You got synephrine, DMAA, and some Uhimbi. We got some different things here that can all do those as well. It just depends what you happen to pick up off the shelf. Now, caffeine is relatively benign. It actually upregulates your dopamine receptors, making you more sensitive to dopamine over time. This is why regular coffee drinkers often report sustained benefits from drinking coffee. But the other stuff, especially the dopamine precursors and the additional stimulants, these are creating massive spikes in dopamine. And remember, what we learned is that the big spikes mean big crashes in your baseline. And so here's what I tend to see. I tend to see people taking pre-workout, they feel amazing, they train hard and they love it. Then what happens a month later, the same dose isn't quite hit like it was. So they up the dose or they change brand. They find something new. They're chasing that new thing. Maybe a couple months later, they just feel like they can't train without it. They feel lethargic without it. And then you get in about like a half a year later, even with the pre-workout, they don't feel motivated. They feel flat. Their workouts just feel really blah. Okay. And so what's happened is they systematically lowered their baseline dopamine by constantly spiking it artificially. And so the better approach that would be here from a pre-workout perspective would be to use it intermittently, maybe once or twice a week for your hardest training sessions, or maybe if you're really dragging ass, or maybe you had a rough day, you need something to kind of get you going. I think that's okay. I think we've all been there to some degree. You could also have the option where it's a 50-50 shot. You could either flip a coin, or you could literally just say every other day throughout the week. So, you know, if you train Monday through Friday or every other training session, you could literally just go a 50-50 shot, but you literally could just flip a coin for it and decide whether you're going to have it or not. Okay. Or like I said, go with the every other day approach, and then you're going to have it 50% of the time versus every single training session. And then you also should take breaks or wean yourself off or use lower doses. Like every 6 to 8 weeks, you could take it completely off the stimulant, or you can really severely pull back what you're using. Maybe you have just your coffee in the morning and you don't actually have that pre-workout, or you skip the coffee in the morning and you just have a little bit of coffee before you train. And so you're giving your body the ability to adjust and wean off some of those additional things that are in those pre-workout supplements. And then going back to just focusing on coffee. If you want daily caffeine, just drink the coffee, obviously within reason, for receptor upregulation benefits without all the other stuff that you're getting in those supplements. Let's kind of talk about music and training. Music is interesting because it can definitely improve your performance. Anybody that says otherwise is crazy. Come to my gym, I'll put your favorite training song on, bump the music on a PR temp. I guarantee you're more likely to get it with the music that you want at a high level, great energy, and that's going to do a lot for you for your performance. There's also good research just showing that music can increase your power output, reduce perceived exertion, and improve your mood. Here's the trap, though, that we get to when it comes to music and getting hyped up, is that if you always train like that, and especially if you're constantly trying to find that perfect playlist, a perfect song, or even that perfect chorus of a song, the perfect couple lines of a song, that you're making your motivation contingent on external factors. That's no good. And I have been guilty of this. I remember periods where I've spent time trying to find the perfect song or perfect aspect of the song, or go through just a phase of where this song is what I play always on my top sets, been there, and just trying to make that perfect. And I'd be checking my phone so much between sets that the music actually became more important than the training. And so what I did was I just stopped really paying attention to what I was playing and found a variety of playlists that I genuinely just, for the most part, liked. Either I made some, I found some on Spotify, and just cued a bunch of different ones of them, and different workouts, I use different things. And so what I found was that after a couple of weeks of doing that, I actually started to enjoy the training more itself, because I wasn't focused on what was playing on the radio or, you know, at the radio in my gym, but I was focused more on the connection of my workout, tracking my rest periods between my stuff, actually making sure that the effort that I'm giving matches what it needs to for the given sets. If I'm using an RPE based system, or if I'm doing power based work like explosive push-ups and different jumps and things, I'm actually giving more effort towards those than I am the music. And now I try to train the music that I like, but like I said, I've got a plethora of playlists. And so I just pick different playlists kind of on my mood for that day. Sometimes that might be some old school rap. Some days that might be some newer rap. Some days that might just be a hype playlist that I find on Spotify. Like I want to really like to search all the time is like Locker Room Hype. I have no idea what's going to show up on that playlist, because it's something that somebody else made. So I'm going to hear some different stuff. And that actually keeps me engaged, at least from a music side, but I'm not actually focusing on hitting skip, right? So it does hit different. I think if you're somebody that's married to a certain playlist or a certain song, mix the playlists up, even try going without music. I think you'll even be surprised kind of how it actually makes you focus on the training more than anything else. And I think that's what's really important from the music side. So I would say try training with music that you're, that playlists that you've not made maybe 50% of the time. And then when you do actually have those big training sessions that you need to focus on stuff, find those couple songs that you can use when you actually need them or want to use them. But at the end of the day, don't let the music become a requirement for your training. I think that will do a lot. I think you'll be amazed from the dopamine side how much better your training actually gets when you're actually focused on the training and not the music. All right, the next thing I want to talk about is kind of progress photos and social media. I think this is a big one, because progress photos can be motivating. If you're somebody that is trying to lose weight, especially trying to lose weight, or you're more of a physique-based person, they can be motivating, and sharing your journey with others can be great for their motivation, but can also be great for your accountability. Again, if you're trying to lose weight, I think that's important, but can also completely hijack your dopamine system. And so if you take a progress photo after a great workout, your dopamine is going to spike from maybe that massive pump you got, that great lighting that you got, all that kind of stuff. We all see that on social media. You then go post it on Instagram, and then you're going to anticipate a bigger dopamine spike, because then you're going to check for the likes of the comments, which you're getting a dopamine spike from that. And then you're going to compare yourself to others that you're seeing on your feed and how you're interacting. And that could be a potential dopamine drop if your comparison is negative, or it could be great if it happens to be you're comparing yourself to the people and you're happy with what you see. And then likes stop coming after a few hours, and then your dopamine is going to drop, because we lose everything to the algorithm anyways. It goes off into who knows space knows where, and then it just doesn't get pushed anymore. And that's just the way that social media is. It's only good for so long, and that's kind of the pitfall of these apps, is they constantly want you to be engaging and using them, and then that's kind of addicted us to wanting to constantly post on them and continue to use them. So your brain starts to associate training not necessarily with the intrinsic reward of getting stronger, getting more jacked, or getting healthier, losing weight, but with the external validation of what the social media is feeding you. People are liking your squat video. They're liking your bench press video, right? They're liking that you lost 20 pounds. And studies show that validation of pre-existing beliefs actually triggers dopamine release. So when someone comments, hey, you're looking good, or awesome job losing that weight, or great PR, or that squat moved easy, it validates your belief that your training is working, which releases dopamine. And this feels good, but it's externalizing your reward system of going back to this whole dopamine thing. And the person who needs to post their workout to feel good about it is in trouble. They're not training for themselves anymore. They're training for the validation. And this is all over social media. The way that I can best describe this is that if I were to take all internet access away for 6 months, would you continue to show up and train hard at the same level that you do if you're posting videos online and you're training or whatever? Would you continue to do that at the exact same level if nobody's watching? And I think there's a lot of people today that if you took their internet access away, a lot of them wouldn't really care about the training that much anymore. Either they're selling something and they're using it to make money, or again, they're looking for that external validation. They just want other people to see that they're training. And for me personally, I hate to be the guy, but for me personally, people that make a lifting-based page versus their personal page is a prime example of somebody that is trying to get external validation from their lifting. They might say, oh, well, I don't want to post on my regular feed. I don't want other people to see that if they don't want to see it. But the thing is, you do want people to see it. Otherwise, you wouldn't make a lifting Instagram or a lifting TikTok or whatever, which just your lifting videos. I understand the premise of what people are saying, but if you genuinely didn't care, you would just post it on your regular one anyways, because the people that do like it are going to like it, and the people that don't like it aren't going to like it. And so I think what people will use is an excuse to get likes and interaction from people that are more likely to like and interact because they do lift weights or they do fitness, strength, conditioning, performance, whatever you want to call that umbrella. And so they kind of lump everything in this one little space and then use their other stuff for other things. They're not too worried about getting the external validation of that because they're not tying their lifting, their training to that other account, but they are to the one that lifts. Hopefully that makes sense. Hopefully I'm not calling anybody out, but I do see that a lot in today's society, especially in the younger populations. All right. So let's talk about the reward after training. So there's classic research from Stanford where they give kids gold stars for drawing, like an activity the kids already enjoyed. And then they stopped giving the gold stars, and the kids drew less than before they started getting the gold stars. And when you receive a reward for an activity, you start attributing your motivation to the reward rather than the activity itself. An activity becomes a means to an end rather than an end in of itself. In training terms, I'll say this here kind of lightly, I'll train hard so I can eat pizza after. The training becomes a chore to earn food. We know when it comes when people get into strength and conditioning or fitness performance, trying to lose weight, they try to justify that their workout is so they justify eating their bad food. We know that's a bad idea. You should not do that. Do not tie yourself to food and your workouts and that you've had to quote unquote earn a meal. That ticks me off. People say that to me all the time as being there. Oh man, you really earned your workout today. Not really. I just enjoyed my food. That's all there really is to it. Or you'll hear, I lift so I can look good in the summer or without clothes on. So again, training becomes a means to an aesthetic end. Or I'll work out so I can post about it or share my progress. So again, the training becomes about the content creation. The better approach is going to be finding reward in the effort itself. Find the reward that you get from training. Take the internet away. Take what your friends and family think away. What do you get out of the training? What does it make you feel internally? Do you feel more confident? Do you feel more powerful? Do you feel bigger? Do you feel stronger? Do you feel leaner? Do you feel healthier? Do you sleep better? Can you do things with your kids? Can you do things with your spouse? Right? Can you play basketball or do these physical activities better because you're doing the extra steps of going and taking care of your health? That's reward in the effort itself. Celebrate the process, not just the outcomes. And we always hear about this. Enjoy the process. Fall in love with the process. And it feels annoying to hear, but it is 100% true, because if you're just chasing the outcomes, you're always going to have to find a new outcome. And that outcome is going to have to be now your new dopamine hit. Where if you celebrate and enjoy the process of what you're doing, going through the struggles and going through the ups and the downs of what strength, conditioning, health, fitness, and performance really gives you, because you're never going to have your best day. You're always going to have some good days. You're always going to have a PR somewhere on some point of a lift at some point in your life. And at some point, you will hit your last PR of your life. It is going to happen if you are a strength athlete. Be ready for it. It's coming way before you know it. And that's how you know whether you were celebrate the process of how you got there or if you're just after the PR. That's kind of a big thing that I really try to get people to take away now is if you enjoy the process, when that last PR comes, you'll be thankful when it came. You'll look back and be like, man, I really appreciate everything that I did. And something me and my wife talk about pretty consistently is when I broke my world records and my, you know, my body is kind of shot at this point is, would I change anything? And no. No, I would not. I think back, would I like my back to feel better, my hips feel better? Absolutely, I would. But I celebrated the process of doing that. I remember the hard training sessions with the people that I trained with, the memories that I made, driving to LeFTS all those weekends, being able to go to Westside Barbell and train with Louis Simmons and sit down and talk with him for hours and seeing him meets and him still remember who I was. And you know, all those memories that I made with all those lifters and going to the Arnold and breaking those records. Those are things that I am celebrating still to this day, and I'm still proud of. Yes, I'm proud of the outcome, but I look back and I think way more about the process and what I had to do those things. And I really am appreciative of the things that I was able to do because of that, not just chasing the record. So again, always enjoy the process. Then make training the reward, not the punishment that you endure for a reward, right? Be thankful that you can get up and squat a barbell or bench press a barbell or deadlift a barbell or feel good about yourself. Make progress every 3, 6, 12 months. Go do a powerlifting meet. Go do some kind of bodybuilding competition. Do something with your kids, right? The training is the reward at the end of the day. And it's going to let you do other great things. As long as you see that your training is a reward, you're going to have a lot of great things coming for you down the pipeline. Okay, so let's talk about building a better dopamine system. And we're going to talk about some cold water exposure stuff. And so we kind of talked about that at the beginning. But cold exposure is one of the few things that actually raise your baseline of dopamine for hours without the subsequent crash. And here's why. The dopamine increase is gradual and sustained. It's not a sharp spike and crash. And so, again, I'm not a cold water immersion person. I'll tell you how I use some cold water stuff in my life, but I don't use the tubs. It just doesn't really work well with my life, if I'm being honest. It's not really that important to me. Not anything I'm chasing. But if you happen to be interested, your temperature, your water should be about 50 to 60 degrees Fahrenheit for those new to it. And if you happen to be already doing it, if you can get down to that 40 to 50 degree range, even better. You want to do over about 30 seconds to a minute. And I go to the beginning, and your goal is to try to build up to about 3 to 5 minutes over time. And then just doing it a couple times a week. Sometimes people will say 3 times a week, 5 times a week. I think if you're doing it anywhere between 3 and 5, you're going to be great if you're interested in it. And the best time that you should be doing it is the morning. It's the most ideal. Again, doesn't work well for most people's lives, so I understand. So do it when you can, but just make sure you're not doing it right before you go to sleep. And the protocol that I use when it comes to cold water is I like to end a couple of my showers every week with about 60 seconds of cold water. And so I'll do some different stuff there with my cold water immersion, or not the cold water immersion, with my shower, and to emulate that cold water immersion. And then what that will let me do is actually feel good when I get out of the shower. And then I can go to do the rest of my stuff for the rest of my night before I go to bed. And that does make me actually feel really good. And then if you want to pair that with your immersions, then you certainly can. Now, the key thing here about the cold water, these are some safety things, is you don't want to jump right into the coldest water that you possibly can. Obviously, build up gradually. If you have heart issues, definitely talk to a doctor or somebody that is, you know, well-versed in your health, and then somebody that you can talk to pretty consistently with your health and wellness. And never do cold exposure to the point of hypothermia. I think that should be kind of obvious. You don't want to end up like on the Titanic. So just a couple minutes in those colder waters, you know, like I said, about 50 degrees or so, and you will be good. And like I said, the great thing is you're going to get that massive dopamine boost without any pharmacology, no external substances. This is just your biology working with you and for you. And this is the most important section of the entire podcast. If you take nothing else away, take away this. You can learn to release dopamine from effort itself. Our brains have this incredible capacity to attach reward to things through our prefrontal cortex. And this is the growth mindset concept that Carol Dweck popularized. It's the idea and effort that challenge itself can become rewarding. And this is how you're going to train this. So during your hardest training sets, you hit that point of maximum discomfort, the last couple reps, you know, those 1, 2 reps in reserve, your muscles are burning, maybe from like hypertrophy-based work, or you get difficulty breathing, doing like running and conditioning and things like that. You need to try to figure out a way to tell yourself that this is the good part. This is the friction, and this is what creates adaptation. I'm actually choosing this discomfort. Usually most of us understand that. If you're going to train and train hard, you understand that the hard part is like is what you crave out of the training. It's not the easy part. Nobody craves doing their dynamic warm-up. You create the hard sets, the hard weight, the hard running, the hard conditioning, the hard breathing, training to failure, getting that pump. That's what we all crave. Focus on the sensation of the effort as something that's valuable, not something that you're trying to escape from. And then you want to remind yourself, too, that your brain is releasing dopamine in response to this challenge. And that's why working out and training hard gives you that dopamine hit. And that's why many people get kicked on to working out to begin with, and they actually feel really good while they're doing it. So I think if you can find that those discomforts in training and embrace those, it makes training much more much easier to sustain over the long run. You got to embrace discomfort to some degree. You just have to. That's part of training. And I think if you're listening to this podcast, you probably are one of those people already and you know that that's what you enjoy about training is the discomfort portion of it. And then also the process of saying, hey, I'm doing this not only to better myself, but I know the things that I'm training for are important to me. And this process lets me get those. Therefore, I love doing this because I know what comes on the back end. That's how you have to look at training. And it might sound like some voodoo based stuff or whatever, but at the end of the day, it is all rooted on in neuroscience, as we kind of talked about earlier at the beginning of the podcast, that your prefrontal cortex can modulate the mesolimbic reward pathway. And by cognitively reframing effort as valuable, so constantly seeing that you're making effort, good effort, and that it's doing good things for you, you're literally teaching your brain to release the dopamine in response to the hard work. That's why I do think some people that are quote unquote addicted to work get known as workaholics, is because they have taught themselves that the hard effort is valuable and they crave that. And when they crave that, then when they stack those wins, they stack success. And that's what makes people very successful when they quote unquote are workaholics. Not always, but you know, usually when you think about people that are quote unquote workaholics or billionaires, those are those people. And I think we all know of the guy, David Goggins, and I think he is a master of this. When you read his book or you heard of his podcast and material, that he has spoke on how he's managed to rewire his brain to seek out discomfort, because he states that it's what works for him. And it helps his brain release dopamine from the discomfort itself. And this is something that we can all do. We just have to learn how to apply it into our training and understand that this is part of the process. So to put this kind of in practice, the first couple of weeks, notice when you have discomfort, acknowledge it, and remind yourself that it's just valuable. Every time you're doing something hard in training, just remember that this is what you signed up for. This is what you wanted. It's okay. It's all part of the process. We're all going right there with you. And we're all doing the same things whenever we train. The next couple of weeks, actively lean into that discomfort. Seek it out. Find a way to embrace the hard sets, the hard weight, the hard conditioning. Find the value in it. Then begin to find genuine satisfaction in the hardest parts of training. So when you're going into train, what's going to be the hardest part of your training session? Is it going to be the squat, the bench press, or the deadlift? Is it going to be the top sets? Is it going to be the conditioning that you're doing today? Is it going to be the accessory work that you've chosen because you hate doing Bulgarian split squats, right? Find satisfaction in that. You're showing up, you're doing it, and you're putting in the effort, and you're going to reap the benefits from it. And then after that, a couple months into this journey, then that's where the hard parts become actually your favorite part. You look forward to this comfort. You look forward to the challenges. How can I hit a new PR on my Bulgarian split squat, for example? How can I do this with more weight than I've done in the past? And it's not the same as saying that there's no pain, no gain. I really don't like that mentality. It's just understanding that the neurochemistry of the reward system and deliberately training yourself to say, hey, I have to enjoy the struggle of this. And as I learn to enjoy the struggle of this, now I'm going to reap the rewards from it mentally. And then you can apply that to other things in your life, of course, but it's just going to help you fall in love with the process and be process oriented in the training. And that's what's important. And that's what gives you the dopamine aspect from the training. Now, casinos figured out these intermittent reward schedules a long time ago, and that the intermittent unpredictable rewards are more addictive than the predictable ones. So if every time you pulled a slot machine and you won $10, you obviously would get bored. But if you sometimes you win $5, sometimes you win nothing, sometimes you win $100, sometimes you win $1,000, you can't stop playing. And this is why gambling is very addictive, is that you're always playing for that high risk win. And we can use this kind of neuroscience for our own self and our own training. And so you can vary your reward systems, is that you can sometimes choose on what days you're going to train with music and without, or you're going to go with a random playlist versus one that you've already created. You can choose what days or what days of the week that you're going to use pre-workout, and then which ones you don't. Or you can even say, hey, I'm going to base this off of the training cycle itself. This is an easier training cycle that I'm not going to use the pre-workout. Or you can even just the angle every other day with a pre-workout and then use coffee on the other ones. Sometimes you can definitely train with the similar equipment that you have, you know, that you're always using the same equipment, or now you can actually mix it up and use a different rack or use a different barbell, use a different set of plates going from calibrated to pounds, right? That's a different way to mix it up. Sometimes you can choose to track your workouts meticulously. You know, you track absolutely every single piece. And there's other times where you can go with it on the flow. Maybe it's a recovery-based day. You're just going to do what feels good and get in and get out. Those are also great from a mental perspective of your training. And then sometimes training with a partner and then training alone. So if you're normally training solo, maybe this week you jump in with somebody on bench press. You jump in somebody with on squat. Like you work in with them. Yes, you maybe do your workout, but training with another person is going to mix up the way that your training feels. It's also going to give you some more feedback, obviously. You're going to be able to interact with other people. There's going to be other benefits outside of just mixing your training in. The unpredictability of that can keep your dopamine system relatively sensitive and responsive, and then you're not habituating yourself into the same reward every single time that you go to train. It's not just the same thing over and over and over and over. So the rule of thumb here is that you never let any external factor become a requirement for your training. If you can't train without X, then you've made yourself dependent on X. So you need to ask yourself when you do your training, if there's something that you're thinking that I can't train without, then you need to figure out a way to get away from that because you are dependent upon that, not only from a addictive-based behavior, but also it's also hurting your dopamine response as well. And that could tie on to a bunch of other things too. Now let's talk about intermittent fasting from a dopamine perspective. So intermittent fasting has become huge in the fitness world. Most people do it for fat loss or autophagy, but there's also an interesting dopamine angle here. And so when you fast, you're practicing delayed gratification. You're teaching your brain that reward doesn't come immediately. You're also teaching yourself satisfaction in the fasted state, the mental clarity, the productivity, and the sense of control. So over time, many people who practice intermittent fasting report that they actually start to enjoy the fasted state more than the eating, and they rewire their dopamine system to release dopamine from the deprivation, not just from the food. And this is the same principle as finding reward and effort. You're taking something that's initially uncomfortable and then training your brain to find rewarding. And this goes back to like the 75 hard a couple episodes ago that I did. It's kind of the same process and how it kind of got me into this. And while I'm not a big intermittent fasting person, I am somebody that does choose to eat much lighter earlier in the day and much heavier in the evening. And I have found much more reward of eating less throughout the day and actually feeling slightly hungry when I train or even throughout the day. I feel lighter on my feet. I do feel like I'm more mentally locked in when I go to do stuff. And my evenings are when I try to wind down and when I have a bigger meal, I know that I don't have to be as mentally focused and accurate on stuff because I'm not doing work during that time, where when I'm doing stuff in the morning, in the middle of the day, I kind of need to be on my toes a little bit more. And so it's what's worked well for me. I've gotten that from the carb backloading days that I had way back in the day when I powerlifted. And I've kind of just adapted that into my lifestyle of eating much lower carb throughout the day, focusing more on proteins and fats, keep my calories in the lower end. And then after I've trained or when I start getting towards my training, I can put a little bit of carbs around there and then just have a good quality meal at the end of the evening. And that's then much better for me. So a practical application though for this would be you can start with, there's a 12-hour eating window. So if you get up, say at 8 o'clock in the morning, you can go from 8 to 8 and you kind of stay pretty consistent on that. You can gradually extend these into the 16-8 fasting or the 18-6 if it works for you, to where you go for a much longer period of fasting. You only got those smaller windows of eating of 6 or 8 hours. During the fast, you can remind yourself of the benefits. You can focus on the clarity that you're getting. Don't make breaking the fast necessarily a celebration. Keep it relatively moderate. I think a big thing is after they've done fasting for most people, when they go to eat, they just binge like a mofo. Don't do that. Just go right back into your normal eating habits. And the goal is to find satisfaction in both the fasting and the feeding. Now, there's nothing wrong with eating some calorically dense food in the end of the evening because you've got this short window to get the calories in. But at the same time, understand that what you did on the fasting side is actually very beneficial as well for your health and performance. And so I don't promote fasting to a ton of people, but I do think fasting can be a great thing for you as you're going to do this. All right, let's talk about some supplements here really quick. So caffeine is pretty interesting because it doesn't directly spike dopamine that much, but it does something better. It increases the density of the dopamine receptors. And this means caffeine actually makes you more sensitive to dopamine over time. And so I talked about regular coffee drinkers often report sustained energy and motivation because their dopamine system is more efficient. So the recommendation is to have one or two cups of coffee per day for most people is kind of like that sweet spot for this. Ideally, you want to have it earlier in the day. I usually recommend for most people not to have caffeine after 2 o'clock. So having had those before, that's great. You can cycle off your caffeine or go to decaf coffee. You can cycle off your coffee or go to decaf coffee, every 6 to 8 weeks to kind of reset your tolerance or pull it back even for a little bit. The big thing here is to avoid the mega dosing of your coffee of doing, and what for me, mega dosing would be 400 milligrams or higher. And so something else you consider too, though, is yerba mate, and it's been shown to be neuroprotective for dopamine neurons as well. So if you're going to consume caffeine, yerba mate might be the best choice. You've got L-tyrosine and PEA. These are amino acid precursors of dopamine. They increase dopamine production within 30 to 45 minutes of their ingestion. So for the L-tyrosine, usually about 500 to 1,000 milligrams in about 30 to 45 minutes to peak, and they last about 2 hours. And it's best for occasional use for mentally demanding tasks or training. So if you've got something that's going to take a lot of mental energy, L-tyrosine is a great thing to do. PEA or phenethylamine, you want about 500 milligrams of that, often stacked with alpha-GPC is seen pretty common. It's very short, about 30 to 45 minutes is kind of the boost you're going to get. And it's best for intense focused training sessions. Again, not something I would rely on a lot, but it's not something that you can't have. And so I would say for me personally, I have some of these in some of my pre-workouts as caffeine free. And so I have it, you know, maybe a couple times a month, and that's absolutely it. I don't really use them a whole lot. I just use them whenever I really feel like I need it. It's been kind of a long day. Maybe I need to pick me up. Or I really need to focus getting it out and get things done. So obviously, if you use these daily, you're going to deplete your dopamine system. So your baseline will crash. So use intermittently, or if you're really cautious, just don't use them at all. The next one's going to be munichapurins. This has been risky. So it contains L-DOPA, which is literally the direct precursor to dopamine. This is prescription level stuff sold over the counter, basically. It was very popular maybe 5, 10, 15 years ago. I remember seeing it whenever I was an undergrad. And it creates a massive dopamine spike and equally massive crashes. And it's used medically for Parkinson's disease, which should tell you exactly how powerful it can be. My recommendation is just to not use it for training. I don't think it's worth it for most people, but you can certainly try it if you want to, but I wouldn't waste your time with it. Avoid supplements that have that. Other things I think you should avoid to help with your dopamine, avoid melatonin. Sounds kind of weird saying that. People are like, oh, I use melatonin to sleep. But studies show that melatonin decreases your dopamine levels. And if you're using melatonin regularly for sleep, you might be tanking your motivation. Better alternatives exist like ZMA, L-theanine, and just better quality sleep hygiene. I think those are the better things to go for if you're going to try to supplement and improve your sleep hygiene or your sleep in general. Avoid bright lights at night. So viewing the bright lights, you know, like on your phone between 10 p.m. and 4 a.m., especially the blue lights from your screen, have been shown to reduce dopamine for several days afterwards. So dim the lights, use blue blockers, shut off your screens 1 hour before bed. I think it's all normal sleep hygiene stuff that we're used to hearing. Multiple stimulants, stacking, taking pre-workout, plus energy drinks, plus fat burners, plus whatever else, you're creating massive dopamine spikes that your system just can't sustain when you do that. Like, you do not want to have all those things. So it's borrowing from tomorrow's motivation just to feel good today. You're basically creating a debt. You're borrowing from days in the future just to focus on how you feel now. You're going to feel it later afterwards. Don't do all that. If you're going to do anything, just pick one of them and roll with just the one. And then obviously daily ADHD meds for non-ADHD purposes. Obviously, if you are diagnosed with ADHD, listen to your practitioner. Do what they say. That's all I'm going to say there. But if you do not have ADHD, taking things like Adderall, Ritalin, things like that, these are massively spike your dopamine. If you have ADHD, then obviously they are therapeutic. But if you don't, then you're recreating the same problems as any other stimulant abuse. And studies showing they actually reduce neuroplasticity when used unnecessarily. So you're just giving yourself a lot of really, really negative things down the pipeline if you're taking those just recreationally. All right, let's talk about some practical protocols here from the summary side. And then so daily, I would say, obviously, get plenty of morning sunlight. I think that's pretty obvious for most people, but it's going to help reset your circadian rhythm. It's going to help support regular dopamine synthesis. Avoid bright lights at night. Train without relying on external stimulation of at least 50% of the time. Practice reward and effort and self during challenging moments. And limit social media specific time. So don't always check it between your workouts. Like, just set a timer on your phone, use it when you need to, and I think you'll be okay. 3 to 5 times per week, you want to try to do some kind of resistance training or intense exercise. If you happen to be in the cold exposure game and you like that, you can certainly do that a couple times per week. And then just deliberate practice of attaching reward to your process, not your outcomes. 1 to 2 times a week, because you can do intermittently, caffeine or pre-workout before your training if you need it for those really hard days. Otherwise, try to avoid it. Letting your music repeat, or not repeat, I'm sorry, but pick different things that you can use on your training days from a music perspective. Use L-tyrosine or PEA. If you're using supplements occasionally, 1 to 2 times a week is probably going to be okay. And then your social media posts and your photos, again, 1 to 2 times a week. If you're taking social media, or if you're taking progress photos for a coach, I think that's one thing. Send that to your coach. But the social media posts, the feel-good posts that you have, I think 1 a week is all you really need to put on there. Everything else should just be kind of, you know, enjoying your social media. And then every couple of months, then take a full week off from all your stimulants if you can, or really severely decrease them. Have a deload week in your training, and then assess your relationship with all your external motivators. See how things are going. What do you need to adjust as you're doing that? I don't think you should ever make any external factor requirement for your training. I don't think you should stack multiple dopamine increasing activities consistently. I don't think you should use dopamine precursors, as we kind of talked about, like the illegal drugs, and don't only train for the external validation rewards. Train because you love to train. So if you can train with an unfamiliar gym, no music, no pre-workout, mediocre nights of sleep, and you still find satisfaction in the process, then your dopamine system is probably pretty healthy. If you feel like you need those things to train hard, then you've probably made yourself dependent on external factors and you need some kind of reset for your body. So look, I know this was pretty dense. I went to a lot of information here and we covered a lot of neuroscience, a lot of different mechanisms, a lot of protocols. And so here's what I want you to kind of take away here, that dopamine is not the enemy. Okay. Motivation, drive, the pursuit of your goals. These are all things of being human. I think it's what probably makes you an awesome human if you have these things. But dopamine is the molecule that makes us want to get better, want to push harder, want to improve, want to chase those PRs, want to enjoy our training. And our modern world with the pre-workouts, the social media, the hyperpalatable foods, the constant stimulation that we're getting things from, not only social media, but just everything that we're bombarded with on a daily basis in terms of technology, is designed to hijack this system that we have. And if you're not careful, you'll find yourself on what seems like a hamster wheel of needing more and more stimulation just to feel quote unquote normal. So the goal isn't to eliminate all your pleasure avoiding things that increase dopamine. The goal is to, one, understand how the dopamine system works so that you know what to be aware of, protect your baseline levels, learn to find reward in effort itself, use external motivators intermittently and strategically, build a system that's sustainable for the long term, not just for a couple of weeks or a couple of months. And the person who can find joy in the process, who doesn't need perfect conditions to show up, who has learned to release dopamine from hard workout itself, that's the person who's still going to be training well into their 60s, 70s, 80s, and maybe even beyond. That's the person that we want to be. That's how you're going to have the unbreakable quote-unquote motivation. And that's ideally the person I think we all want to try to become if you're listening to this podcast. So if you got value from today's episode, I really appreciate you sticking around this long. Share it with a friend. Like I said, if you're on YouTube listening, hit that like button, subscribe, leave a comment, share with a friend. If you are listening over on someplace else like Spotify, Apple, iTunes, leave us a 5-star review. Let me know that you enjoyed the podcast and share with a friend that you think that could benefit from this, especially from the dopamine side and the motivation side. If you want more deep dives like this, I really appreciate you watching this one. You can check some of the other episodes in the past, and I try to post new episodes every single week here. So again, just make sure you're subscribed, hit that like button, get the notifications if you really want to. I really appreciate you being in for today's video, and I'll see you at the next episode. Thanks for listening to Thirst for More podcast. Make sure you give us a follow on Spotify, iTunes, or anywhere else you like to consume your podcast. You can also check us out on YouTube at The Smitley, where you'll find clips and lots of educational-based material for strength and conditioning and exercise science. You can also make sure you give me a follow on Instagram at The Smitley or at Team Thirst, which is my gym Instagram page. For any more future updates on episodes to come, you can make sure you follow me there. I'm your host, Brandon Smitley. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you at the next episode.